Do you run the current iOS 14 betas now that iOS 14 is out and released?
You know, I normally run betas like throughout the year, but for whatever reason, I just never installed 14.2. So,
is 14.2 is the one with the new like now playing layout and everything?
Yes.
Yeah. It's cool.
Which I think is really cool, actually. Like,
yeah, it's cool. Good stuff there. Yeah, I ran it on my 11 Pro Max, and there was even like a real scenario where now that the now playing lock screen area, you can like scroll through content before you begin playing something. So instead of just like hitting play on the last thing that you played, you can pick from like a bunch of recommendations from different places. And I was like, I've got something in mind. I wonder if it's on this list. And it was, you know, you scroll horizontally, and then I found it, and I was like, that was actually useful. Then I sold my iPhone to Daryl Sasse, who's one of the photographers and video guys at Space Explored for me. And, you know, I'm going to get the 12 Pro Max. I guess ordering it is in a week and then releases in 2 weeks from today. And I didn't bother putting the beta on the review unit 12 or 12 Pro from Apple. I just figured, If there's something on the release train that's not in the beta, I don't want to not have access to it. Although I am curious because of, I guess, Apple Pro Raw. Is that what it's called?
That is what it's called, but I haven't seen anyone say it's in 14.2 either. So.
Yeah, it's not in 14 for sure. So, and that's also another thing is on the iPhone 12 Pro, I kind of want to not put that on a beta in case it comes in a release that isn't in line with the beta release, because the build cycles have been all over the place. But so all that to say, I am not on a beta either, and usually am. And someone is on a beta that bought my phone. And they, along with... It's a thing where you kind of know who's running a beta right now, because if you recall back to iOS 12, the beta ran too long or so, and you know something happened where there was... not a new beta, not a release, and the beta had a hard-coded expiration date, and there was no new version beyond that. That's happened to this version of iOS 12 or iOS 14 beta, where every time you hit the lock screen or notification center, you get a new iOS update is now available. Please update from the iOS 14 beta. Close. And there's nothing to do, nothing that you can do except get off of the beta and go to like iOS 14.0 or whatever. And I've had people, especially like from the space community, ask me, because I know that I'm like the Apple guy, hey, what do I do? I'm like, I'm sorry, there's nothing that you can do. And then poor Daryl, who switched from Android, his last iPhone was 5S, to the 11 Pro Max, he's been hit with this as well. Like, I'm so sorry. So
he can flash it though, right? You can restore back.
Yeah, I think, he could. Yeah. I suggested just wait for an update to come out.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, at this point, it's like, why bother restoring when most likely the release version will be out next week? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It was really on me to not flash the phone before I sold it.
I mean, I think Apple just needs to set slightly longer expiration dates on their betas.
Yeah, I mean, was this like coded on a non-COVID release cycle? But I mean, because it isn't like a 14.0, it's a little bit confusing as to why it happened. Like, it's 14.2, or is that just a label and it's still the 14.0 cycle internally? I mean, I don't really get what's happening here.
I mean, presumably it has to be like whenever they started the 14.2 beta, that was post COVID world, right? Like, you know,
yeah,
Apple's like prepping 14.0, like, and that's frozen in what, like, end of, you know, early September, basically, like that kind of time frame. So 14.2, like, they can change the expiration date on a per beta basis. So whenever beta 7 came out, or the beta, you know, that would have been frozen 2 weeks before it came out to us. And so at that point, you know, you think that they can see their own internal time schedules, they just bump the expiration out a bit. You know, that's probably what's meant to happen, but whoever in charge of it just forgot to change the date or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just probably some silly human error rather than anything like systematically wrong.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry for everyone.
If they wanted to defend against it, they could just have a policy where they add an extra like month on every single expiration date. Because realistically, there isn't any harm in beta device is just living on the old version for a bit longer, because it's not like it even stops you. It's not like it stops you using it. It just annoys you with a little pop-up warning every 5 seconds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's it's unfortunate for everyone who it affects. Some good news. That's some good news. So today, Apple One, all three tiers of Apple One are available. You can sign up for Apple One, the services bundle. And I don't know about you, Mayo, but I took advantage of this today. I'm now an Apple One Premier subscriber.
Same.
Cool. Yeah.
So you have individual plan, which is individual music, TV Plus, arcade, and then 50 gigs of iCloud. And then you have the family plan, which is music for 6 people, arcade, TV Plus, 200 gigs of iCloud. And then you have Premiere, which is everything before, but 2 terabytes of iCloud instead. And you get News Plus and Fitness Plus when it comes out, right? So
yeah, which was going to be the next couple of months, because it's going to be before the end of the year. Yeah,
everyone freaked out because this was revealed on the earnings call, and everyone's like, Fitness Plus isn't coming out tomorrow as well. And it's like they've literally been teasing that for weeks, but okay.
Yeah.
When they announced Apple One, it said, you know, Fitness Plus coming later this year versus full 2020 for Apple One itself. And realistically, you're only going to miss like 1 month, because surely it's going to come out this side of, you know, the early part of December, right? Because they're not going to do it after. So
yeah,
if
and
the premier plan, you went to Fitness Plus for 1 month, basically. That's what's going to happen there.
Yeah, and there is some like funny stuff with trials that I think if you had access to certain trials, and you want to do the premier bundle, that maybe you forfeit some trials. And I think one of those would be the Fitness Plus free trial if you're on premier. If you're on individual or family, then Fitness Plus isn't even included. So, you know, you buy a new Apple Watch and you get 3 months of Fitness Plus. I think that's what's included, the duration. Then you
the
don't
miss
out.
The trial stuff is messy because, like, obviously we've just come off the 1 year free Apple TV Plus for people that got in on day one, and then they extended that for 3 more months as well through to February. So at the moment, nobody's paying for that. And even if you pay monthly at the moment without a trial, they refund it because they were, you know, being fair or whatever for the Christmas period. So in a way, at least in the current instant of time, the bundles are the worst value they'll ever be, right? Because everyone's on trials for all sorts of stuff. If you just buy it, if you buy any new Apple device at the moment, you get 3 months free of arcade. And if you go to a bundle on the Apple One platform, you don't get a discount if you're on a trial, right? Your trial is just, it's as if you didn't have a trial. Because Apple's position is, well, you know, you're not paying any extra for having these trials, so we don't need to refund you anything. If you've paid for like a year of arcade up front, or if you paid for a year of Apple Music up front, because you can do that on the individual plan, for instance, and you switched an Apple One bundle, they will refund you the difference in the money. And that process, I think, is a bit buggy, or it's confusing at the moment as well. But that is the idea, that if you've paid Apple money and then you're going to pay for an Apple One plan, they will prorate back. So basically, you're not double charged, right? But
right.
The trials, you don't pay for them. Like, obviously, you bought, for instance, the TV Plus, right? You bought the new phone, and then you got a free year. But you're not actually paying for the trial element of it, so there's nothing to refund. So theoretically, you could be on a TV Plus, arcade, and maybe if you get Apple Music from your carrier, for instance, you can get all of them for free at the moment from different ways. And an Apple One bundle plan is not going to help you, because you'll get charged the same price as everyone else, right? But those are like edge cases. It's
right, yeah, yeah.
And like the TV Plus thing, until 2 weeks ago, it was going to expire on Monday, right? Because that's a year.
Me too. Yeah.
So you know, the fact that I'm going to quote unquote lose out on $15 because, you know, I could be getting it through to February is kind of irrelevant, really, because until 2 weeks ago, I thought it was ending on Monday anyway. So like, you know, you have to give them a bit of slack. And if you really don't want to subscribe to the bundle now, fine, just wait a few months, do it then. Like, there's a lot of, you know, it's easy to jump onto it and be like, this is so stupid, what's the point of the bundle if I'm just on the trials? It's like, there are millions of people in the world that are not on trials, that are not in this situation. Or if they're on a trial, it's about to expire and they want something to bind themselves, you know, they want to carry on or whatever. Like,
yeah, I mean, I paid for the year of arcade, or don't know. I guess I did. I don't know. I think I paid for a year of Arcade. I was set to renew for a year of Apple TV Plus from November, but then that got pushed to February. When I switched, there was a little bit of confusion. I mean, I pay for subscriptions through one Apple ID, which is a me.com email that is longer than my iCloud ID, that is a me.com email is shorter. So one for store, one for iCloud. And when I signed up for the Apple One Premier plan, I then had to, I think it asked me to cancel the current iCloud subscription that I had, and then also assign which Apple ID it goes to. And so it was before it would let me like confirm being on the new thing. So the user interface for everything looked nice. I think it was laid out really well. You know, told you what's included in each tier. I was confused a little bit at the options being individual, family, and Premier, which I guess we already knew. But I did wonder, oh no, if I go to Premier, is that like, will that include family or
yeah, because they probably need like a in brackets family, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like Premier,
yeah.
Family or something, because it is a bit odd that like it says individual, family, and then Premier. It's like, is the Premier for a family? I guess so, but like
it's like
if you don't know in advance, I can definitely see how that is confusing.
Yeah, and the only thing I was concerned about was Apple Music, because I know that TV, Arcade, News, Fitness, that those will be family sharing anyway.
Even if you're in the individual plan, you can family share,
yeah,
the Arcade and TV plan.
iCloud is based on your storage tier if it's family or not. Correct. And I wasn't super worried with that, but I was worried about if I go to Premier based on this that I'm looking at, am I gonna lose, is it like going from the $10 a month or the $15 a month Apple Music plan to the $10 a month instead? And so I was happy to learn that was not the case. It was just a little bit confusing, but I put aside all of the worry about what a trial will be and when Fitness Plus comes out, because we know it's coming this year. What do I gain from this? You know, I've got one bill a month for Music, TV Plus, Arcade, and iCloud. I mean, even just doing a Music and iCloud bundle was kind of cool to me. And then I gained News Plus to be included, and then Fitness Plus. So I'm happy with the bundle once everything's available. But even for now, it's cool to have just one bill. And I did, I think PayPal is like my payment, you know, source on for services. And I did get like an email immediately of a $9.99 refund through PayPal from Apple services. And so I think that was the 1 terabyte of iCloud storage that I already paid for this month, maybe. Or 2 terabytes of iCloud storage. So I did, there was like a refund that was instantly triggered. And if I didn't have PayPal as my source for payments, then I wouldn't have had that email. And I don't think I would have known if it was just like my debit card or something. So,
right. So
it worked out.
So when you signed up to, and obviously because we jumped on it the moment that it started rolling out, right? So you had to go dig for it. You have to go like settings, Apple ID, subscriptions, wait for the screen to refresh, and there's an Apple One button, and then you click on that, and then it pops up the UI. Like, I'm sure in the goodness of a few days, they'll start like sending people push notifications, like, save X by moving to Apple One now and stuff. So people will get on it. But it is kind of weird that right this second, you kind of have to know where to find it rather than just being shown to you. But that'll get sorted out, I'm sure. But so when you went and did it, and you got offered the plan, it didn't say start trial. It just said get Apple One or whatever, right?
I guess if anything was confusing, there was also like a message about an incompatibility with some services, I think, that were on the trial or something.
So what happens there is when you go to subscribe to Apple One, if any of the services on that plan you haven't used a trial for before, mm-hmm. you will automatically be given a trial of it. Right. So in my case, I had never activated the News Plus trial. So when I went to subscribe to Apple One, I didn't have an option for, you know, start paying for Apple One this instant. The only button that was there, the button at the bottom, the blue button, it just said start trial. So you click that. And now currently I'm on a trial of Apple One because technically I'd never used the News Plus stuff before. So I have a month to decide if I want to stay on the bundle or not without getting charged. And you know, in 30 days time, I'll carry on with it, obviously. But if I didn't want to, I'd cancel and then nothing would happen.
This is
where it gets complicated. In my case, all of my other subscriptions, like the TV Plus, the Arcade, they still are in the subscription page and they still list and they haven't got a refund yet. And it just says, this subscription will be included in Apple One starting 30th of November, which is when the free month runs out, right? So I think in my case, because I also too paid for a year of Arcade up front, because it was, you know, if you pay for a year, it only costs you 10 months versus 12. So if you're gonna use it for a year anyway, you might as well save 2 months. So I think my prorated refund on that won't actually get credited to my account until the Apple One trial finishes. Do you see what I mean? So I don't think I'll actually get
the
30th, which I think is a lot of the confusion that's happening on Twitter and stuff, because people are like saying, you know, I should move to Apple One, but I haven't got my refund for this, and, you know, Apple's screwing out money. I think you'll only get the money back once you leave the Apple One trial and you start paying for Apple One directly. And that's confusing because some people get directly put on the trial and other people just get directly paying for it because they've already redeemed the trials for all the services behind it.
Yeah, well, this is the boat that I'm in. If I look at my subscription, I see Apple One free for 1 month, Premiere 1 month for news, November 30th, 2020. So, and then I'm on a trial. So, I don't know. I'm on a trial. I also see the option still in the settings app to begin a 3 month trial for Arcade, which I guess I'd paid for the year anyway, and maybe there's differences in having one Apple ID for store and one for iCloud. But by buying the iPad Air last week, I think that gave me the Arcade for 3 months. So I don't know, but I couldn't draw out like how this is working, but I know it'll work out in the end.
Interesting. So you're probably still on the trial, but you got a refund immediately. I mean, it's very odd.
I wouldn't have known about the refund if it wasn't for using PayPal as my payment source, because it just triggered instantly.
I mean, I'm sure it will get sorted out in the wash, right? They'll catch up. This is one of the things about the Apple One bundle, right? Is because there are so many different ways that so many different people would pay for or not pay for Apple services, whether they're getting like, whether you're on a trial, whether you're getting included in your carrier plan, or you're on, you know, you're a student, so you get the student discount. Like, that's why the Apple, because some of the criticism for the Apple One bundle when it was announced back in September was, you know, why is there three plans? Why is there not just one plan, right? And part of the reason for that is that it reflects the reality of the world, in that life's not that simple. There's so many different, like, offshoots of things. So Apple's trying to accommodate different use cases without having, you know, a million different options. They've got three, but that should address most of the situations. The only people that are really like have no interest in the bundle at all are if you're a student, because student price for Apple Music is $4.99 a month, right? And that comes with Apple TV Plus for free. They keep calling that a limited time deal, but, you know, it's been a year so far and they haven't got rid of it. So at the moment, if you're a student, it's $4.99, you get TV Plus and Apple Music. And so if you're going to get 50 gigs of iCloud for yourself, you're only paying $6, and the cheapest Apple One plan is $15, so it's kind of irrelevant. And I think even if you're a student, it gives you student pricing of the Apple One bundle at the moment of $12, so it's still twice the price of what you pay anyway. You get an Arcade included, but you could pay for that separately. So I think students are the only ones at the moment where there's like a gaping hole, where there is no like competitive Apple One student plan, which is a bit of an omission. But otherwise, if you were paying for Apple Music and iCloud storage before, you know, chances are it makes sense for you to move to one of these bundles, right? Like, you only have to appreciate one of the other services in the set, and then you've basically paid for the whole subscription, and then you get a couple thrown in for free. That's basically how it works out if you do the math on it.
Cool. All right. Tell me about your Apple Magic keyboard that you bought a few weeks ago from a few years ago.
So yeah, the keyboard, we spoke about this on the show. I say I'd ask people, would I be able to do this clever hack of kind of fake using it as a KVM switch by having it Bluetooth connected to the laptop and then plugged in via a wire to the computer. And finally this week, the cables came and everything. It was really annoying. I ordered a cable from Amazon like last week and it got cancelled. So I don't know, stupid Amazon. So I got the keyboard. I'm happy with the keyboard, obviously. The cable came, plugged it all in, and it mostly works as I hoped it would. So I can have the computer switched off. I'm using it, pairs to the laptop automatically. I then switch the computer on. It notices that the USB cable is now plugged in, so it switches to the computer. Fine. But when I turn the Windows computer back off again, it doesn't automatically rejoin the Bluetooth on the laptop. So I have to manually like flick the power switch on the keyboard to jiggle it back to the other way. But otherwise, it works great. And my previous solution to this was having two separate keyboards that I would switch between, or I'd have a a USB KVM button thing that you'd have to click to switch back and forth. So clicking the button is basically equivalent to switching the switch, you know, on and off. So I'm happy with it. I've simplified my life. I can now use
an two-in-one keyboard, yeah,
on laptop and on PC, and be very happy with it. Actually, that's just reminding me. I've now officially lost my opportunity to service my laptop.
Oh no!
Yeah, that's all over, because that was November, right, when the 2016 MacBook Pro came out. So I bet my 4 year window on that's up, you know, on the magic, you know, on the Butterfly keyboard replacement program. So,
oh no, huh?
I'm officially on that side of that situation. Come on.
Well, I mean, that's only to reset the clock anyway on failure. So, oh well.
Yeah.
Although it would make like reselling your computer.
My Butterfly keyboard is so bad, you wouldn't believe it. Like, I could just about type on it without a key coming out of the cap of the slot it's in. It's crazy. But yeah, if you are in this very esoteric position of having a Windows computer that you turn on and off and a laptop that sits in front of you that's a Mac, and you want to use an external Magic Keyboard with both, this is a pretty viable solution. This week, Happy Hour is brought to you by Incipio. Founded in 1999, Incipio was born with a love for technology and the then novel idea to protect your phone. 20 years on, they're still innovating and designing cases made with you in mind. Dropping phones is a fact of life. As much as you try to baby your $1,000 phone, everyone makes mistakes, and that means everyone needs a case. Just got a new iPhone? Incipio's Duo cases for iPhone 12 are now available to buy. The Duo case combines a minimalist design with maximum protection. It's a two-piece case with a soft-touch finish and a raised-edged bezel to protect the display. The Duo offers a slim design that crucially protects against the dings, bumps, and drops that just happen to phones. And now you can get up to 12 feet of drop protection with their new Impact Strut technology. And of course, the Duo is wireless charging and 5G compatible. The cases even feature antimicrobial protection that eliminates 99% of surface bacteria and germs. Haven't got an iPhone 12 yet? No matter. Incipio also sells Duo cases for iPhone 11, iPhone 10, iPhone SE, iPhone 8, and the iPhone 7 series. And all of this is backed by their lifetime guarantee. You can purchase your new Duo case online at Verizon.com or your local Verizon store. Or you can purchase with code HAPPYHOUR and get 20% off at Incipio.com. Once again, it's available for purchase at Verizon.com and retail stores, or buy online at Incipio.com and use promo code HAPPYHOUR for 20% off.
Cool. And next we'll talk 5G. So your question to me in the notes says, has 5G changed my life? My life has changed through this moving process. And I have been able to seek out 5G. I'm on AT&T. I found 5G in New Orleans, and I found 5G in Orlando by being in visiting both places, or moving to Orlando this past week. I think in both cases, I'm getting speeds that you'd see with LTE anyway. So I haven't seen like the radical 5G speeds. I've just seen, you know, whatever is considered 5G coverage. So that's kind of a mystery so far. The other thing is that I can say this week is that I'm super annoyed whenever the iPhone on AT&T says 5GE now, because if you don't know, if you don't know what 5GE is, which is just it's LTE, it's 4G, just another flavor of it, it's not 5G in any way, then either you may think you have it, or you may think you have it on your older iPhone, which is going to like bite AT&T in the butt, I think. Or just in my case, someone who knows all about it, it's just annoying, because you've got to decipher 5GE versus 5G, and the E is like super, you know, small case, a letter. So I wish I could just like disable 5GE on the phone and only have LTE or 5G.
Because you're still in that period of novelty, right, where it's like, I want to find 5G everywhere. So
yeah,
you
get
to a place and you like glance at it. You're like, I've got it. Oh, no, I haven't.
To give you an example, I've got... You know, and I've seen places where, like, I go just around where I live now and where I kind of travel. I've got all of it. I've got LTE, I've got 5GE, and I've got 5G. And in my apartment, for example, I've got 5G in the bedroom and bathroom, but I've got 5GE in the living room and kitchen. So, you know, it just depends on what you need there. Of course, at home, I'm using Wi-Fi, so it's not really a big concern. But I mean, I've seen like 500 down. I've not seen, and maybe this is only Verizon with the millimeter wave stuff, but I've not seen, I've not seen where it's like, you know, in the 1,000+ range.
I think 5G non-E will max out in the like 500 area, right? And then if you have to go to, I'm pretty sure in ideal conditions you can get a gigabit on the 5G non-E version, but you know, that's very hard to find.
Right.
If you can find the pockets of space that have 5G UW, which is, AT&T does have it. I just think it's not quite as available as Verizon's not very available at UW, if you see what I mean, but they do yes. they do offer it.
I've seen over 400 down this week.
The 2 gigabit, you know, you consistently can get the gigabit speeds, the 2 gigabit speed.
Yeah. So the road from my apartment to like Port Canaveral, Cape Canaveral, where Kennedy Space Center is around, that's like a 30-minute drive, and there are parts of that road where there's almost no service at all for AT&T, and there's parts with 5G, like this is like the best 5G I've seen so far, where it's like probably 500 down, if not close. So it varies. It does.
Yeah, I mean 500 down is not bad for the you know, the sub 6 gigahertz 5G version, because UW is that if it was like universally available, just imagine, which is not going to, it's not going to happen for years, right? But imagine for a second that ultra wideband was covered the whole country, blanketed the whole of the US. I think all iPhone 12 owners would be complaining about battery life, because the when you're on UW, it uses more battery, and not just a little bit, a lot, right? So the 5G that isn't the UW version, is more efficient in terms of power as well. So you can get the smaller max speeds, but that's the one that's more efficient. The UW one has to like burn the radios a lot more to get the speeds that you see. But if you do that for, you know, too long, your battery will drain very, very quickly. Like I think Joanna Stern in her demo video, she like used 15% of the phone's battery in like 20 minutes or something, just by like doing a 4 gig download and just letting it run.
Well, I see. Yeah. Man, it makes sense. It's working. But the 500 down that I saw, like, that's the kind of the perfect context for it. Like, who cares what I have at home when I've got home Wi-Fi that's much faster? Yeah. But to have great speeds on the road in kind of an empty area, I mean, the area between Orlando and then Cape Canaveral, there's nothing in between. And so it's just that stretch. And, you know, assume I'm the passenger, and I'm hotspotting on the Mac from my iPhone, tethering from the iPhone. Having like home Wi-Fi speeds is really useful, because that's where network speeds kind of fall apart for me sometimes, is when I am tethering and it's like, oh, you're getting mobile data speeds on a desktop experience. And so to have like home Wi-Fi experience while tethering is pretty good. And then we also, just one tidbit from the iPhone 12 is that now tethering, It's both 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's nice. It's
yeah. So you can, and they've done that to support 5G, obviously. So you can get, you know, hundreds of megabits over the tethered Wi-Fi.
Yeah. And so that's just a use case where it's working.
Do you have 5G? Do you have the setting on 5G auto, or do you just have it forced 5G? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, forced 5G. Well, yeah, I have it where it's like 5G always, not just when needed right now, because it is new and I want to test it, and I don't want to do a speed test and like, you know, have it not do the right thing and not know if it's doing the right thing. So I am doing that, but you know, long term, like I guess like next step is if battery life were to be an issue, then to slow it down. But I'm not in a situation where I've had battery issues at all. So and that's partly to do to just being, you know, in a charging environment so often. But also, you know, the phones get better battery life than they did years ago. So,
and I presume you've been using the 12 Pro, right? Not more than the 12.
Yeah. And there was one day where I had the 12 Pro, with a colleague who was shooting some photos for Space Explored. And the idea was, you know, we'll capture some really cool, 2x pictures from a distance on the Pro. And so I moved my sim to the 12, you know, and I'm planning to do a write up of both phones, probably mid next week or so. Well, probably in the next week, and just my impressions and everything. But, you know, if the camera was, if the 2x camera was on the 12 and not just the 12 Pro, man, it would be hard to decide just over materials, because the 12 does feel really nice just because it's lighter, in the same way that like an aluminum Apple Watch feels just kind of neat, and how that it the more affordable materials are actually like they weigh less than the higher price materials, and it feels like an illusion, or like some kind of an accomplishment. If you're used to using the heavier stuff and then you go to the really light thing, it's like, oh, it's kind of like when they make the phone thinner. It's like, wow, they made this thing thinner. To change materials, it's like, wow, they made this thing lighter and it's in the same dimensions. That's really neat.
Yeah.
You know, and then in years past, like OLED has been a big difference for me, and the fact that it's OLED on both phones this year, they both seem really premium. Like I think any iPhone 12 is going to feel, it's going to like rival how premium an iPhone 10 or 10s feels, and even 11 Pro. I can't wait for the Max to come out, so I can really have that, like, this is the top of the line iPhone experience if you want a larger screen and an even better camera. But for now, I'm really impressed at the 12, and the 12 mini will be the same way, you know, where it's the same OLED screen and new design, and it's not a cheap product at all, like in terms of how it's built and made. So this is a good year for any iPhone 12. There's not like a compromise phone.
Yeah, I know. I 100% agree. Like if you can either look at it as a positive and that all the phones are very close together, or if you want to be like, you know, critical of the line, you can say, well, is the 12 Pro really worth its price when you could just get the 12 and basically get everything?
You know, well, and you and I think it's the way that it should be, which is, you know, when you know if you want if you need the higher priced phone, yeah. There shouldn't be confusion over it, and it shouldn't come down to materials either, because at the end of the day, you know, many of us put phones in cases and we don't get to appreciate those materials, and it's like the functional thing about it. And so I like this year that there is so much like overlap in what how the phones, even just how they look, and how, you know, OLED being the big difference this year on the non-Pro phones, that's a nice thing. And to have that with a redesign, if the 12 was the old design and the Pro was a new design, then it would just change things entirely. Like it'd be like, you know, no one buy the old design LCD phone, you know, at any price when you can have like this. The Pro is like the state of the art now, but they did that with the 12 mini and 12. And so, I like the clarity of, I'm not tempted at all by a non-Pro phone, but in the same way, people who want a new phone, but don't know if they need the Pro or not. Like if you're not sure, then you probably don't. And it really comes down to, like, you know, on the Max, the screen size, that's a clear point. And then on the camera, whether it's 12 Pro or 12 Pro Max, you know, do you want the 2x lens, or if it's the Max, the 2.5x lens? You know, otherwise all things are so similar that it's easier to pick a good phone this year, to pick the right phone for you.
Yeah, like, I love Apple product lines where, you know, if some random person on the street or some member of your family comes to you and say, can I get a iPhone 12? Do you recommend them? You can just go, yes. You don't have to go, well, you know, the lower end model's only got an LCD screen and the storage is a bit powdery. Like, you know, so either don't buy it at all, save some money, get the higher end model. Like, the 12 is not like that. You can just basically say, look, just go in the shop or go and look online, whichever one you like. Just get it and you'll be happy. Like, that's
which is also helped by 64 being replaced by 128 at the base stand. That's a positive change, because 64 is enough. I lived on it last year just fine with paying, you know, $10 a month for iCloud storage. But if you don't do that, then 64 can be quite tough.
And that's only on the Pro though, right? I think the 12 is still 64.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah. Well,
it's the Pros that doubled.
Yeah, so lose that point, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's only where you get the probably one of the biggest differentiations between the 6.1 inch and the 6.1 inch Pro is the base model Pro gives you more storage.
Yeah.
If you're like me, your phone is in your hand all day, every day. As much as we try, we just can't escape them. We're addicted. And you have to have a case if you're carrying it around you constantly. Now, I hate phone cases that are heavy and bulky, and I bet you do too. So that's why you should check out Totally's ultra-thin and minimalist cases, available for iPhone 12 and older iPhones as well. That's Totally, spelled TOTALLEE. Their iPhone 12 cases are super thin, which means they're actually MagSafe compatible. And that isn't true for every iPhone case out there. And not only are they super slim and light, Totally's cases are completely unbranded. I don't want ugly logos on my phone. Unbranded cases are just perfect for that. Totally is designing cases for people that don't want a case, but they do want some protection against drops and bumps. Totally creates cases that preserve the sleek design of the actual phone that you bought. And plus, all of Totally's products come with a 2-year warranty. If your case cracks, or even if your dog eats it, they'll send you a replacement, no questions asked. The company's cases are available now for all models of iPhone 12, so if you just got a new phone and need a case, check them out. Just go to totallycase.com and use promo code podcast for 25% off. That's spelled TOTALLEECASE.com and use promo code podcast, all one word in capital letters, for 25% off.
All right, Apple earnings. Let's hit this real quick. And we have a lot more to talk about after Apple earnings. But Apple released their quarter before the iPhone release earnings. Usually this includes a little bit of iPhone sales, like probably the most for the high-end phones, because it usually includes the pre-orders and the initial like weekend of sales. So this quarter had no new iPhone sales. I want to say no iPad Air sales. There's obviously no Mac update yet. So it's kind of, this is how Apple has done with its existing products and services and everything. How do they do?
Yeah, given that they didn't release the iPhone in this quarter at all, pretty solid. Like, they had record revenue numbers of $64.7 billion, slightly over profit of $12.67 billion, but they like were pretty clear that if the iPhone had, you know, not been delayed and come out in this quarter as usual, they'd had a pretty blowout situation.
Yeah, and they did release the Apple Watch Series 6, which probably was like half of the revenue. definitely.
Well, they said they set all-time record quarters for services, unsurprisingly, and Mac. So the Mac was did like $9 billion revenue, which is the highest ever, and it's the highest ever by like a lot. Like, you know, I think the previous record was like $8.2 billion or something. Do you know what I mean? Like a huge $1 billion increase, and then some for the Mac line. And you can probably, you know, obviously a lot of that has to do with back to school and the fact that loads of people are working from home and stuff. But even so, like in a quarter where there are no new Macs, and it's a quarter where Apple has basically said some really, really good new Macs are coming before the end of the year, they still managed to sell $9 billion worth of desktops and laptops to people, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and the the big thing for me is, you know, we often hear one more thing. You know, it was like the Steve Jobs, Tim Cook teaser. This week we learned a new teaser, more exciting things.
More exciting things to come.
So Tim Cook says that more exciting things will come this year. And obviously we know that is at least the Apple Silicon Mac, you know. And that is something I'm very excited about. And that's something that we learned more about this week too, in that it's not just Apple's promise that at least one Mac will transition from Intel to Apple Silicon this year, but that there is evidence, you know, that it's still happening. They're not like going to miss that deadline. Because one thing is that, I guess this was a Chinese source that claimed that there were that three versions of the A14 chip.
The China Times. So.
Okay, yeah. So we know A14.
They basically said that there's the A14, obviously, which is using the iPad Air and the iPhone 12. And then in the coming weeks, there's going to be an A14X, which will be used in the MacBook update that they believe is coming. The 12-inch MacBook replacement, basically, will, according to China Times, use an A14X CPU now. I don't believe they know final branding, but that kind of class, right? And they said that that chip will be used in the MacBook and it will be used in the iPad Pro refresh whenever that comes, which is...
And X is what Apple's used prior to Z to say this is the graphics-focused iPad chip versus the iPhone version of the chip.
Yeah. And China Times also says there's an A14T. So apparently the A14T, codename Mount Jade, is what's going to be used in the 2021 iMac update.
Now X is a cooler and later in the alphabet letter than T, but T is better in this, I assume? Or a higher class?
You'd have to assume so, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what... I don't really trust the final names. I just think they're kind of saying, like, you've got the A14X line, which will be shared between the lower-end MacBooks and the iPad Pro, and then you're going to have the A14T, which China Times says is going first into an iMac update, and that will include a new Apple GPU. So I think what they're trying to get at is that you've got the A14 as it stands today that we obviously know from the iPad Air and the iPhone 12, and then the A14X is for iPad, which will have higher core count and you know, slightly beefier GPU. We're going to iPad Pro, and they believe a 12-inch MacBook update, and then the A14T is going to be the one that starts replacing like computers with dedicated graphics. So, you know, the higher end Apple laptops, like the 16-inch MacBook Pro, for instance, and obviously the iMacs have dedicated GPUs inside them. And they're saying that the A14T will be the one to feature the first like beefy Apple GPU that's not just like on the chip itself, basically.
All right. T.
I think, like, I'd be very surprised if they use the same names for the Mac chips, right? Like, even if they're the exact same chips, which they might, if there's the 12-inch MacBook update, I could very easily see that, you know, being powered by an A14X. That's perfectly powerful enough. But I bet they call it something else.
Maybe there's
14 or something. You know, I mean, they'll make a different name for it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a million ways they could take this. But just to kind of a point of clarity that I have on my mind, we talk about three chip variants, A14, A14X, and A14T. A14, by marketing names, we have A14 in the iPad Air and A14 Bionic in the iPhone. And they're essentially the same thing. It's just that I guess the A14 Bionic has all of the 5G stuff that you don't see on the iPad Air.
Do you not call the iPad chip A14 Bionic?
I don't think so. Maybe they do.
I don't know. But I assume they did because it's like that's the CPU architecture, right?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Well, anyway, that is one chip, and I agree with you. It feels like they would, like, even if it's super similar, that they would try to do some distinction between the Mac chip and the iPad Pro chip, just to distinguish the two, because they do want to have that message that they're doing a family of Apple Silicon chips, not putting iPad chips in Macs, even if they're adequate for Macs, especially entry-level Macs.
Yeah, and I mean, in June, they were very plain that they are making a new family of chips designed for Macs. And
yeah, so take that, China Times, or whoever you are.
well, like, that can be completely right, and they, just like how they have, like, they even said how the A13 chip is, you know, the Foundation's A13 chip are used in the Apple Watch Series 6. Do you know what I mean? Like, they obviously, part of the reason they're moving all to their own silicon is that it's economies of scale and reusability. Like, technologies and research and development that they develop for the phone primarily, because that's the biggest product, they can then filter elsewhere. We've seen it happen with the iPad, and we've seen it happen with the Watch. And obviously now they use those chips in, like, the HomePod as well, and the HomePod Mini literally is, they call that the S5 chip. So... and they're going to do the same thing for Macs. And regardless of whether they are identical or they call them the same thing, they're clearly going to be... Like, even Mark Gurman at Bloomberg said this last year, because when he said they were saying the first Mac chip would be the 12-core thing, you remember that report? He said that's still going to be based off the foundation of the A14 process, like 5 nanometers, the same general layout and the Bionic, you know, CPU architecture with the little cores and the big performance cores. It doesn't make sense for them to, like, do completely different things for no reason. Like, the performance profile of a 12-inch MacBook is going to be very similar to the performance profile of an iPad, because it's going to be fanless and it's going to be thin and light, right? And then when they do higher-end versions, like a 13-inch MacBook Pro, for instance, they have to have something beefier. And then when they do a desktop chip, they'll have something, you know, more different still. But the core, like, functionality of the light and the layouts of the transistors, I'm sure will be shared and common across the whole line. They'll just, you know, rack them out to make them as custom as they need to for each device. So, like, yeah, they're gonna, if the first Apple chip is, you know, a carbon copy of the iPad chip, or that doesn't mean that they're all going to be like that. That's just what fits a 12-inch MacBook form factor, right?
Yeah, cool. So basically, this is coming soon anyway, so we'll figure out how this shakes out in the next few months. And, yeah, and there's no clear knowledge really of what's happening yet.
They announced the labs, didn't they? I mean
the Apple Silicon Labs. So and that's November 4th and 5th. So early November, just that's next week. So presumably they'll be talking a lot more about Apple Silicon on the Mac than they have yet, besides the announcement next week. And we also saw in a Big Sur beta 11.0.1, which is like, okay, 11.0 isn't even out yet, but this is kind of that thing where, just like with the iPhones, they don't want to release the 0.0, which has the new devices, but this still references like think new devices. So we're getting close, though. We're getting close, basically.
Yeah, they tried to hide it, but yeah. 11.0.1 includes like basically placeholder files for three Macs codenamed 2020F, 2020G, and 2020H. So there's probably three Macs coming out this year. I think Mac Rumors had a thing where Apple called MacBook Pro a 2020 MacBook Pro, even though there isn't a 2020 MacBook Pro out, right? Like, so that might be on the cards. Presumably this 12-inch is coming around. And then, I mean, Ming-Chi Kuo said 13-inch MacBook Pro will be the first ARM Mac, so that's what we're looking forward to. I'm excited. I really want a 16-inch ARM MacBook Pro, but you know that's not coming until next year. But it can't be like too long before the whole lineup's ARM, because Apple promised they were going to finish the whole transition within 2 years. So if they're starting at the end of this year, they'll be done by like, you know, they'll almost be done by the end of next year, if you see what I mean. So we haven't got long to wait. They will be on a crazy pace, and it certainly seemed like Cook was especially excited about the exciting things to come. He was like, you know, even when they do tease stuff like that before, he was particularly amped up about this one. So now I'm very interested. he was very animated in his normally very rote investical speech. And so obviously there's ARM Max, and the last rumors were the November event's going to be on the 17th, right? Which is like mm-hmm. post-election stuff, so it makes sense. And that would be what, ARM Max, and then maybe AirTags potentially. Like, that seems to be what's on the docket.
Cool. Yeah, when people ask me about like Mac buying advice, I'm certainly saying, like, I had a friend ask me about what MacBook Pro to purchase for, or what MacBook to purchase for Christmas, and I was like, my advice was just wait until after this rumor date and then see what the options are. But that MacBook, you know, for their needs, MacBook Pro, but that's probably bound to get better soon. So yeah, I'll be happy when this is a thing.
Do you need help with marketing for your small business or company, but unsure if you want to get an outside agency on board? Just don't bother. Get top level talent for the work that you need done, and start talking to top level growth marketers today with Right Side Up. Right Side Up represents a group of premium, vetted growth marketing talents ready for you to hire. RightSideUp works directly with companies to hand-select markets that will suit your team. And they're very flexible. Whether you need one person or five, hiring for 5 hours a week, or maybe even 50 hours a week. Marketers specialize in areas like paid search, social media advertising, and more. They've created industry-leading practices for Amazon, affiliate marketing, and podcast advertising. RightSideUp are trusted by hundreds of early-stage businesses, all the way up to companies like DoorDash, Zenefits, and Yelp. They all just want to do growth marketing better. So if you need to launch a new campaign or are just looking to grow your existing marketing team, you need Right Side Up. And right now, Right Side Up is offering our listeners a free week of service after your first quarter of engagement when you go to rightsideup.com/happyhour. That's rightsideup.com/happyhour to speak to one of their marketing strategists and finally get the customer acquisition and marketing help that you need. Go to rightsideup.com/happyhour.
Let's talk about the iPhone 12 a little bit more. So there was a story that happened this week. It was based on the FCC filing about how the MagSafe magnet inside the iPhone 12 works. And from what I saw pass by, it's that Apple disclosed that the magnet is capable of not just receiving a charge, but pushing a charge. And so the idea of, can the iPhone 12 sort of do reverse charging, so charge something through the phone on its back, is that possible? And this follows after, I think it was the iPhone XS that was first rumored to work with bi-directional charging like some Samsung phones have, and then that didn't happen, and it didn't happen with the 11 family of phones, and that is where you can lay anything that works with Qi charging on the back of the phone and have it charge slowly, and you know, you're tapping into a very limited battery to begin with, so the appeal there is a bit limited. But in this case, you could see a MagSafe accessory aligning perfectly. It doesn't fall off. You get efficient charging out of the phone, and then you could charge, like, say, AirPods or something. So anything that could maybe charge with MagSafe, or maybe some future product. Is that about what happened this week? And that's kind of as far as we know, or what do you think?
It was a bit more direct than that. So the FCC report, which, you know, someone found, it says that in addition to being able to be charged by a desktop puck charger, 2020 iPhone models also support wireless power transfer charging to charge accessories. And it says currently the only accessory that can be charged by iPhones is an external potential Apple accessory in future. So it's a bit more direct than just like, oh, the iPhone can maybe do reverse wireless charging. It basically says that the FCC, that Apple has asked for approval for the fact that there is an external potential Apple accessory in the future that will be able to charge that way. So it's a bit more direct than just like, oh, maybe the hardware's technically supports it, but Apple doesn't have intent. Like, clearly in this letter, they've said that there's a, and the grammar's a bit wrong, but it says external potential Apple accessory in future. So that's pretty on the nose, right?
Like, cool. All right.
Yeah. And the obvious choice would be like a future AirPods case that can be charged directly on the back of the phone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now, so the MagSafe puck is a really good size to be a wireless charger for AirPods. It's small enough that there's no, like, you don't want to misplace it. It doesn't snap magnetically at all. It just sits in place, but there's no guessing at, like, where do you put it, because the puck is small enough that you just put it where it fits. We mentioned in past shows, whenever Apple was rumored to be doing like a less ambitious plan for AirPower or their own original wireless charger, which I guess MagSafe is that, then they didn't have they have a wireless AirPods case, but they don't have a first party charger for it. And all of the individual chargers for wireless charging, they're huge. Like, they got a big platform because they're meant to be charging phones and not tiny little AirPods cases. So the MagSafe charger is a good, like, even if you just want a wireless charger for your AirPods and you've got a USB-C brick already, then for $40, it's a pretty good wireless charger just for AirPods that happens to work with the iPhone 12 family of phones. In this case, I'm not sure what it would look like to be compatible, because the ring is bigger than the current AirPods case, unless it just were to clip onto part of it and be, you know, a low power draw, all that's necessary. I don't think that you'd want it to be as big as the MagSafe puck, like the wallet is, and the case obviously is. So I'm having a hard time kind of envisioning what a redesigned case that works with MagSafe would be, unless it's just that it has the magnet inside and attaches to somewhere on that circle, versus just the middle of it or the whole thing covering the whole thing.
Or maybe there's no magnet and you just put it in the middle belt and it charges.
Yeah, which I guess you can't do now. And they would maybe turn it on through software.
Samsung reverse wireless charging, you don't need a magnet for anything. You just make sure you place it in the right spot on the back of the phone and it charges the headphones, which is, you know, not essential, but it's quite convenient, right?
And yeah, I feel like the magnet is a part that makes it worth it. If you're not going to do it now, then, and you're going to do it in the future, then having a change in the case where you could have it not slip off easily or be misaligned, because right now you're kind of guessing. You don't guess with the puck, because the puck is the puck. There's no extra area there. But if you're just doing the back of the phone, then you are kind of guessing, where would that circle be if I were to put the MagSafe charger on it, you know?
Yeah, so maybe, you know, the you know the design of the MagSafe accessories, that they have the ring and they have that little like hook that comes down the bottom that makes it look like a spotlight icon with a magnifying glass, right?
Well, like what the clear case has drawn on the case, yes?
Yes, yeah. And so the MagSafe puck, it doesn't care super duper about like exact alignment, so it just has the ring. But something like the MagSafe wallet case, it wants to be directly flushed down vertically, right? So its magnets have the ring part, and then it has the line, the tail that comes off the end. So
okay.
I don't know exactly where the wireless charging elements are positioned, but maybe the future AirPods case magnetically attaches to the line bit. You see what I mean?
Is the line, so like the cases, the MagSafe silicone cases, they don't have the line inside, at least visually. The clear case does.
They just don't draw it on.
Well,
the clear case has the line coming off it.
Yeah, it has the line, but I was wondering if that's why they decided to go no lip on the bottom of the clear case, like it's an open area, and they have lips on all of the silicone cases and probably the leather cases.
That's a good point. We should tear down your $50 case and see where the magnet ends.
Sure. I did see this week. I tweeted this out that you can't put the iPhone 12 or 12 Pro directly on a fridge and have it stick, but because the case has the correct side of magnets, you can put an iPhone in a MagSafe case on the fridge and have it reliably stick. Like, you know, you pick your orientation and you move the fridge door around, then it's going to stay there, which is really cool for having, like, I want to do a FaceTime call and hold the phone up while I'm cooking or something, you know.
Yeah, like, don't trust that.
It works, and it's you know, the case alone will stick, the case with an iPhone will stick. It's like a fridge magnet as long as you have the case, because if it's just the phone, it's the wrong side of the magnet, I think, and it just kind of pushes away.
You're relying on the ceramic shield there for insurance.
Yeah, maybe put a little bumper on the floor or something to catch it, a little pillow.
To be fair to Apple, they're, you know, obviously the 12 has been out for a week or so now, and there's been all the drop tests and everything, and it does seem like the ceramic shield does improve the cracking durability of the screen. So if you're worried about that,
I mean,
the ceramic shield does seem to make a difference.
I am not pacifying my review units. If they were my own, if it was my own purchase, I would, because I had such a bad experience with the 11 Pro and Pro Max scratching. But on these, you know, if they scratch, it's their own fault for not being sturdy enough, you know. And so yeah. I'll let you know how they'll hold up.
I don't plan to drop one, but the ceramic shield only affects cracking and doesn't affect like surface scratches, like fine scratches.
Gotcha.
So, alas, expect scratches. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then there was another report this week that was pretty exciting about the next generation of AirPods, not Pro, but AirPods, which, you know, AirPods were ahead of their time, and then it seems like the second generation of AirPods were kind of based around AirPower coming out, and then that didn't happen, and so it was a very minor update that should have been out maybe several months before, but they added the ability to talk to Siri with a voice command, is that right?
Okay,
so that was new with those, and then the option to buy a wireless charging case, and there were some other things like lower latency between switching between phones or devices, low latency in gaming and that kind of thing, but for the most part it was the same AirPods, same price, same design. You could get the optional wireless charging case, pay more for it, buy it on its own. For most of us, it was a chance to change our AirPods because we had hit the battery limit on the first versions and they weren't holding their charge for very long. Like that's the legacy of AirPods second generation for me. AirPods Pro, if Pro didn't exist, then you'd imagine that by then that AirPods would have had their big update from the first gen, because the second update was very minor. But Pro came along, and so instead of having a big update, you had a new category of AirPods. Now it sounds like it's time for AirPods non-Pro to have their big update that they really haven't seen yet. So what's rumored there?
Well, you said this is exciting. I'm a bit nervous about this one. Because I've said on this podcast many times, I don't like in-ear headphones, right? Even the Pros, just the way they fit, don't like it. So I like the bud style of the current AirPods, where they just sit on the side, on the outside of your ear, right? And they just stay there. What this Bloomberg report describes is that the AirPods are going to get a lot of the AirPods Pro design. It says the AirPods will look similar to the current AirPods Pro, gaining a shorter stem. Okay, great. And here's the bit I'm nervous about. Replaceable ear tips.
No ear tips to be replaced.
You can make ear tips that just sit outside of the ear. Are they going to make in-ear tips, or can they do just, you know, can they do replaceable tips like the current style, but don't actually go all the way in your ear? Because if they go anywhere in your ear, I'm not going to be very happy.
Yeah, I don't know of any that use tips that sit on your ear.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm a bit worried about that. Apple is also looking to improve battery life. Great. But the model will not feature higher-end AirPods Pro features like noise cancellation. Okay, fine. And then there's going to be new AirPods Pro update as well, according to Bloomberg, that says Apple is trying to make the earbuds even more compact by eliminating the stem completely. A design in testing has a more rounded shape that fills the user's ear, similar to the latest designs from Samsung, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. So it sounds like the AirPods, the third-gen AirPods, are going to inherit the AirPods Pro short stems with the Force Touch activation. Happy about that part. And then the AirPods Pro update coming later in 2021 will be more like the kind of jelly bean style earbuds, right, that you see from other manufacturers, which don't have the stems that come out. They just kind of act like earplugs in the ear itself.
Yeah, I'm an AirPods Pro user, and I love them. They are so good. To have that level of noise cancellation and convenience with two kids running around is so useful. And then to have transparency, you know, if you just turn off transparency or noise cancellation, you kind of get that like very muffled sound where you can hear around you, but it's like you have earplugs in. Transparency is a really great feature that resolves that problem where you can hear around you better than you could without it. So I love the features of AirPods Pro. I'm not married to having the stem. So if you've got, what I do with it now is I switch modes. If that were to only be in software, or if it became some sort of a gesture like double tap again, you know, we don't love to tap our ears because it's very loud to tap our ears. It's because it's in our ears. But if that's required, then I'm actually kind of, I know some people don't like the way the kind of, you know, the bean style earbuds look, but to me, they look more futuristic than AirPods. And it's the reason that we all kind of gawked at AirPods the first time that they came out, is like, you can imagine this like super miniature in your ear thing. That's like the future of like wireless earbuds. You barely see them. And then Apple's were like, no, they cut off the wires and they use that as the base for the, you know, the features that they supported. They were wonderful. But if they do get pros to go to the next level of design where there's virtually no stem, then I'm happy with that because, you know,
it's natural evolution, right?
Yeah. And others are there first, but I still don't like, I when I had an opportunity to replace my AirPods Pro when I lost them or lost the charging case for them a couple of months ago. And I did look at like all of the other competitors just thinking, oh, I really don't want to buy AirPods Pro all over again, this close to what could be an update. And they cost more than Samsung's thing and Google's thing and, you know, everything else out there. And then I ended up just buying a new charging case instead, which was wonderful, value wise. But, it does appeal to me that, you know, every other competitor comes in a color that isn't white called black, which is really neat. And then,
deserve, please give us black AirPods.
Yeah. And that they just kind of can sit flush in your ear. And if you like that, then it's a nice thing. So, and I think that I like that. I've tried some before. You know, we had Raycon sponsor several weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, and their product is like a very affordable, truly wireless earphone. And it's one of those where it's like in-ear style, no stem, has a button that you can click to control, you know, different things. And I received a pair of those through the sponsorship to try out, and I kept them around because like there were, it like you said, it's a natural evolution. And so for me, it just feel like that style is like a little bit more modern than any stem at all. And that the stem is like, it's kind of like the home button of iPhones, where it's like iconic, you know, it defines the product in a lot of ways, but it also, like, if you get rid of it, then I'm happy about that.
It's like the notch on the screen, right? Like, the notch has to be there at the moment because it, you know, to get a full screen design and everything else, and they can't put Face ID under the screen and they can't put all the cameras under the screen. So, okay, the notch is there. But in the fullness of time, the notch will go away. That's how I see the stems on the AirPods, right? They were, you know, first out the gate with AirPods and they needed stems because that's where the antennas are. And even today, AirPods have like the best range of any of these in-ear buds, right? And so they had big stems. Now they have shorter stems, and one day they'll have no stem, right? That's just how it's going to go.
Yeah, cool. And then what's the word on HomePod in this story?
Yeah, so the Bloomberg story says that Apple is considering a third HomePod model. So this would be a model that sits between the $99 HomePod Mini and the $299 HomePod. It would basically be just like a mid-range version.
Like a $200 HomePod?
So yeah, 100, so. I mean, 200, 300. in terms of price, size, and sound quality. But Mark says this is quite like tentative. It's unclear if Apple actually launched that product or they can just further cut the price of the higher-end HomePod, right? So
yeah, wow. It seems like having a mid-range. It seems like that, I mean, I think you and I are both fans of the $300 HomePod. And personally, I'd rather see that be updated to have the same stuff as a Mini. So that would mean what, the U1 chip and the, what is it called, Thread or something? There's a new wireless standard.
Thread. That's yeah. Like the alternative protocol for talking to devices that isn't like Bluetooth or Wi-Fi.
Yeah. So to have those things in the big HomePod, if that's all the update is, then cool. But
and price.
And yeah, but like, if it's still $300 and it does more than even just those two things, then I would be interested in that. I think as you know, a premium HomePod, not multiple, but at least having that. Or if it turns out that they can't do that with the current HomePod, and they think that this mid range one, I'd prefer to have like just two HomePods in two different price tiers,
yeah,
and not to have the three with one at each $100 level, because it, you know, to have like the modern one, the Mini, be like the least sounding good one, and then have like a you know, Sonos did it. Sonos had a Sonos Play 1, Play 3, and Play 5, and the 1 had a clear market, and the 5 had a clear market, and the 3 was like, kind of didn't know what to do with it. And so I hope that this turns out to be the next high-end HomePod. I mean,
right, I can see
there's probably a sound gap
that is between the Mini and the big one, but instead, when they introduce it, they just kill off the big one, right?
Like, yeah, and then it's close enough to the big one, because there's probably a ceiling that they can hit that the current HomePod is higher than, but that demand doesn't need, and that to your ear, it's not going to be a big difference. Like you, if you were to compare the Mini and the big HomePod, you'd be like, okay, I can identify those night and day, but that you might not be able to identify by ear this new thing that could be mid-tier versus the current HomePod.
Yeah, like I think the $299 HomePod has clearly not set the world on fire just because it is too expensive, right? And so I think it's unsustainable long term for them to keep that around at $299. Either they're going to have to add a lot more features to it, or they're going to have to bring the price down. I don't really see a third model in the lineup helping that. I still think, like, if you add a third model at $199, you're just kind of making it even easier for them to kill off the $299 version.
Like,
right?
Do people, like, buy the...
Imagine a three-tier lineup there.
Yeah, do people buy the $400 Google Home speaker max?
I think they buy that in lesser quantities than the $299 HomePod.
Yeah, me too, because, like, we only heard about that when it launched, but, like, people don't talk about that one. And it sounds like, I mean, and $400 is more than $350 or $300.
I think I saw some stat, which is 80% of smart speakers cost less than $70. So
yeah, I can believe that.
Yeah,
which HomePod will raise the roof on that one.
Yeah. Like, I think the current HomePod, the big one, perfectly fine. They're adding, you know, home theater mode and stuff. It is just slightly too expensive still. Like, if you want to do a home theater setup with that, you've got to buy two of them realistically, so that's $600. Like, when they're on sale at Best Buy or whatever for $199 or $229, it's so much better. Like, they could just push the price down and be in a much better shape than bothering to like fully invest in a whole, you know, in-betweeny model that might be squeezed out on both sides or just push the 299 out of the market sooner. Like, I don't know what they're going to do with the big HomePod, but I don't think the answer is adding a third option in the lineup. I think they either have to just drop the price on the HomePod or revamp it.
Yeah, for $200, are the retailers making money on that sale, or is it just to get you to come into the store?
Good question. I mean, I think the HomePod has... I think the HomePod was stocked in inventory sizes equivalent to other Apple products, and it doesn't sell at the speed of other products do, so they probably just get excess stock every now and again. They just want to sell off, and it gets you in the store. Like,
yeah, and gives you shelf space back.
Yeah, because it's certainly not like it's at $199 price all year round. It's only for, like, you know, 4 months of the year or whatever. So it does seem like more like crash course discounting rather than, you know, that's just what they're priced at now. Like, even if they got it from $299 to $249, that's getting there, right? Like, as it stands today, I think if you're in the Apple store and they're selling both HomePod models, it's going to be really hard to convince anyone not to buy the $99 one, right? Like, I think the difference in the products, they're just not big enough. Like, yes, the big one will sound a lot better, but most people will not think it sounds better enough to spend the extra $200 on it. That's the problem.
Yeah, and obviously they're able to do... Again, we're a week out from HomePod pre-orders and maybe 2.5 weeks out from release, but we don't know what the Mini sounds like, and there's no reviews yet because it isn't like the review is embargo is lifted. But what we do know is that Apple is selling for $100 something that they think is a good sound. You know, they wouldn't do like an Amazon Echo Dot level speaker for $100 and call it good sound unless they've really, you know, missed the point here. But so we do know that for a third the cost that they can achieve a pretty good sound. And so maybe that, you know, one of those things, I know our colleague Ben Lovejoy was talking about what's inside the HomePod Mini, and that, you know, there's, I forget the terminology, but what is it, that there's no the base delivery that the big HomePod has is not in the HomePod Mini, but they do something radiator or something really, you know, like that, to try to have the same effect. And so maybe it's that they actually can bring down the cost of building one and achieve similar sound. So it's a lot of we'll see. And this is just a rumor about a thing that doesn't exist yet, but definitely I think we're both in agreement on, we don't want a three tiers of HomePod, with one being the old one and one being the kind of what do you do with it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like I think three models is a bad idea, and also the status quo is currently unstable. Like with the $99 one and the current $299 situation for the old HomePod, it's clearly not going to last forever. It's just a big question mark about whether they're going to kill off the big one entirely, where they're going to price drop it, where they're going to replace it with something else.
Yep.
Clean My Mac X is an all-in-one cleaning and optimizing software solution for your Mac. It's a single package that combines the most useful features for spring cleaning your computer. You can scan for outdated junk files and easily work out what is using up all your valuable hard drive space. It can make a virtual map of how your storage is distributed across all of your files and folders using a feature called Space Lens. Easily declutter old cache files, logs, mail attachments that you no longer need, and so much more. Clean My Mac X detects it all, and you can potentially save gigabytes of space with a single click. The reality is, when you remove a Mac program, often it leaves behind it little preference files and caches that your computer just no longer uses or needs, and there really isn't a good way to clean that cruft up using built-in macOS operating system features. That's where Clean My Mac X comes to the rescue. Use Smart Scan to delete it all in just a couple of clicks. And Clean My Mac X is designed to be super easy to use. The app will show you step-by-step explanations for every component so you can be fully confident in the tweaks that it's making. Clean My Mac also features a system report menu, a dashboard of stats like free space, CPU load, used RAM, and other essentials. The menu is beautifully designed and offers a sneak peek at the state of your entire system. And with macOS Big Sur almost upon us, Clean My Mac X is already working to be fully compatible. Learn more about Clean My Mac X and download it for free at macpaw.app/happyhour. That's macpaw.app/happyhour. Thanks to Clean My Mac X for sponsoring the show.
All right, let's talk Apple TV, as we often do.
What's Apple TV? Never heard of.
Apple TV Plus, actually. I'm going to run through a few things that people did or did not do, or entities did or not do, and you fill me in on the details. So this week, I know that T-Mobile did a thing. What is that thing?
They announced some TV Vision service, which I don't really know much about, but they give away TV Plus free for a year.
Yeah, and they replaced like their other thing too. But yeah, they're doing some TV Plus integration. Ted Lasso is doing a thing. What is that?
They got renewed officially for a third season. Third season, you say? They haven't done season two yet. That's correct. Season two starts shooting in January, but Apple has, you know, obviously seen how successful it's been, and they've, you know, pre-ordered a third season, which allows the writers to have the open story for the end of the season, so they know they've already got another season coming. And depending on the COVID situation, I think there's a chance they might even film like some of the third season stuff sooner than they would normally. So by having the two season order, they can potentially start like doing, like if they have ideas for the third season like written, they can shoot some of those shots in one go instead of having to, you know, bring the cast back together again. Like, so it just gives it gives the production team leeway to get what they need in different ways, instead of only being able to shoot the 10 episodes of season two in January. If there's an opportunity, like if they only have pitch access for a week or whatever, and they need crowd scenes for season three as well, where they can shoot them too, and just keep them in the can for a while.
And then that's 10 episodes, not 8, right?
That is 10 episodes, yeah.
Yeah, and there's some drama on Twitter. There's some drama on Twitter where one of the cast members from Little Voice was upset about the amount of promotion that Ted Lasso has had from Apple TV accounts, and that, you know, that Ted Lasso was getting all the attention and Little Voice was not. And Little Voice is a what's his name, Abrams.
J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams production, and that there were rumors of like an overall deal with Apple and J.J. Abrams, right? And that didn't happen. And,
yeah, he ended up signing with Warner Media.
Yeah.
The rumor was that he turned down an offer that was more money from Apple to work with Warner Media instead. That was what.
Yeah. So there's obviously some tension there, but it was interesting. So that spillover on Twitter from one of the cast members of the show, and my take was just that like Ted Lasso is just organically. I watched it before the hype. I'm glad because I probably would have avoided it if I had heard the hype. But like, oh, that definitely won't be for me. But I was surprised by it, and so that was what I liked about it. I haven't tried Little Voice yet, but it's just a different kind of show, you know?
Little Voice is all right. Ted Lasso is a better show. Like, that's the long and the short of it. It just is. And personally, I follow this stuff reasonably closely. I don't think Apple did any more marketing for Ted Lasso than they did any of the shows until it became a smash sensation and they've capitalized on it.
Right? Yeah, that's how the way I saw it too.
Yeah, like I think the morning show, clearly they promote more than anything else because they just do. But in terms of all the other content, the amount of like Twitter advertising and just tweets and videos and behind the scenes and all that stuff, it's basically been about the same for every single show of the adult shows. The kid shows are different, obviously.
My exposure to Ted Lasso before viewing was first on Tonight's Show or Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Jason Sudeikis did a remote plug for it in an interview. And then I saw it like maybe that weekend on the carousel of shows. I was like, "Oh, that the concept was interesting. Let me try it out this for an episode." And then it was like feel good TV, and I liked it. So, and then you told me, "Oh yeah, everyone's really liking that. It's kind of got a buzz." And then came the marketing after that. So
yeah,
Long Way Up. So the electric motorcycle.
Oh, sorry. Let me just drop a little little thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ted Lasso. They are working on merch.
Oh.
Yeah. I was told that in the wake of the success, they are actively designing like jerseys and stuff to sell. So that's interesting because Apple doesn't really have like merch available for any of its franchises at the moment, but Ted Lasso is clearly popular enough that they're going to try it, and I think there's pretty obvious merch opportunities with like football shirts and stuff, right?
I want Long Way Up merch. That's what I want.
they sell that already.
Yeah, I know.
Long Way Up have a website that's independent of Apple. They just have their own brand, so I guess they just sell it on their own.
Yeah, so Long Way Up, that's the the documentary series following Ewan McGregor and Charlie Berman as they ride electric motorcycles from South America to Los Angeles. And this week, me and you were kind of chatting over iMessage about this. And I was, I think my idea was, you know, A Long Way Up seems to be pretty successful too, and kind of a feel good show. And I bet that was probably one of the least expensive shows to put on TV Plus, because it's you know, certainly compared to like Amazing Stories even. So and then a few minutes later they published on YouTube an 83-minute ride, uncut, point of view style of them riding their motorcycles. And I have that queued up for the weekend because I love the point of view style of like watching motorcycle rides. I'm away from mine, from my motorcycle for a couple of weeks until middle of next week. So it'll be like 10 days without it. And so this is kind of like, it scratches that itch for me. And it's so relaxing. I've played the Long Way Up episodes. I watched them 2 times. Every time they come out, I watch them the first time, kind of multitasking, you know, and then because they do pretty good in the background. It's just like kind of like a podcast, but you know, you don't have to watch every second to know what's kind of going on. And then I'll watch it again for like the content of like, oh, this is what they did there. This is the story that came out of this episode. And I still haven't finished. I've not watched any of the second season that, you know, so Apple's version is season 3, basically. I've not watched any of the second season and I've not finished the first season. So I'm waiting for when the third season has its finale and I'm like, oh no, what do I do now? Oh, I've got all this extra back catalog to get through.
And that 83-minute video is like perfect, like bonus material, right? Because way driving, motorcycle driving is like a category on YouTube. People just like vlog it or whatever. They just
I have cameras on mine. Yeah,
exactly. And this is just that, and it's available on YouTube. And if you go into the Apple TV app for the Long Way Up show, you scroll down for the bonus content section. There's nothing there.
Yeah, I was gonna say, on one hand, it's a plus that they endorse YouTube as like this is where the people are, and not to hide, tuck this away as like an iTunes extra somewhere, which you never can find those on other platforms. But it's also a shame that you can't find it from the TV app. It's too bad.
Just put it in both places. Put it on YouTube and in the app.
Yeah. I was looking, I think like over 8,000 people have viewed it since yesterday afternoon. So I'll be one of those soon. Jon Stewart is doing a thing.
Yeah, this is pretty big news, actually. So Apple announced this week that former Daily Show host Jon Stewart will be starting a current affairs show next year. Each episode will be about an hour long and focus on a single news topic. Stewart will executive produce and host. And coinciding with it, there'll probably be a companion podcast as well, because we keep hearing that Apple's going to do podcasts to go along with their shows, but it hasn't actually happened yet, but it's apparently happening, and Jon Stewart's going to do one as well. And the show doesn't have a name yet, but it does have Richard Plepler attached, so he's also down as an executive producer. Obviously, Plepler's the ex-chief of HBO that Apple signed an exclusive deal with at the beginning of 2020, and we've kind of been waiting for his, like, you know, first projects to appear. This kind of seems to be on that basis. Jon Stewart originally had a first look exclusive deal with HBO that ran from like 2015 through 2018-ish, but nothing really came of it and it kind of died off. So it now seems like Apple have picked up the mantle, and they say starting early in 2021, there will be a new Jon Stewart show back on TV. And he was, you know, a huge name and lost on in 2015. So it's a big get for Apple.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like a nice complement to their kind of nonfiction content that they do with Oprah, right? Like, nothing wrong with Oprah. Oprah's great. Lots of people like her. And she, you know, she covers like stuff. But you need diversity in nonfiction as much as anything, and you need variety. And Jon Stewart's a great person to head that.
Yeah. I grew up watching Jon Stewart and Colbert and on Comedy Central, and then I followed Colbert to CBS, and Jon Stewart went off the air, and he's been involved in other projects and everything, but like his show and his point of view and his perspective stood out in the era of politics and news when the show aired. But if you go back and you watch a lot of the stuff, it's very dated because it's just times are so different now that it just looks naive. And so I'm curious how this will be. Like, what's the modern approach to this for Apple TV Plus? And picking up HBO's baggage, I mean, or like, you know, rejected material. It's interesting because I think that this is going to be a big deal on TV Plus, where on HBO it would have, you could easily see it be canceled if it didn't hit certain numbers, and you know, even worse, it got delayed, and then canceled before it even began. So I think this will be a very good fit for TV Plus, which is still kind of defining itself in ways beyond fiction, and the limited bit of nonfiction that it has.
Yeah, and the deal is a comprehensive first set deal, so presumably there will be other projects, not just this current affairs show, that also made by John Stewart Production Company.
Yeah, Colbert came out as a character on John Stewart's show. So just to give you from some perspective of like how you go to be one of the three major late night hosts, you know, a lot of talented people came from his show. So that's neat. And then James Bond is not doing a thing. What is he not doing with TV Plus?
There were rumors that MGM was trying to sell off the James Bond film No Time to Die to a streaming service because it's been delayed in theaters because, you know, the box office isn't returning. MGM don't want to release a film that's not going to make enough money for them, and nobody's going to the cinemas. Even as more and more reopen, the occupancy rate's still really low. And so the box office is extremely depressed. So there is apparently talks that happen between at least Apple and Netflix about acquiring the rights to stream James Bond instead. Apparently MGM wanted $600 million for a one-year license. And both Apple and Netflix said that was too expensive. Apple apparently tabled a deal in the $350 to $400 million range. But since that time has happened, obviously nothing's come of it, and MGM are now committed to a April release date. If MGM had been wanting asking for $600 million for a longer period of time, like a 5-year license or a 10-year license, I fully expect Apple would have bid that in a heartbeat, right? Like, I know people are like, $600 million is so much for a movie, but you know, Apple spends $250 million on one season of a show at the moment. They literally just committed $230 million minimum to producing Martin Scorsese's next film. And that's a film that's not even finished, right? That's yet to go into production. The value of completed shows and completed movies is so much higher at the moment because production has been delayed everywhere. So if Apple could get James Bond for $600 million for a decently long period of exclusivity, they would 100% jumped on it. But 1 year is probably too short. Like when they acquired Greyhound, the Tom Hanks film, they got 10 years on that. So, you know,
one for year, 70 million.
For 70 million, exactly.
Yeah.
If they'd been getting 10 years for No Time to Die, I'm sure they would have done it. But that's current in the situation. If they were willing to bid $400 million for 1 year, then maybe by the time February rolls around and MGM has more clarity on what the box office is going to be like in April when the film's going to come yeah. out. And the box yes. office is still doing really bad, then maybe the negotiations will resume.
Which it will be, and conditions are not going to be that much different then. That's interesting. So it was kind of an opposite of a bidding war between Apple and Netflix. It was like a negative bidding war.
Yeah.
that's when Netflix won't buy it, then that's saying something because they don't care about money. They just care about their catalog. All right. Last thing, we'll do a couple of stories before we head off. One I wanted to mention is that Eve, their light strips, now work with HomeKit Adaptive Lighting, which is the feature where, and this is so perfect for like a light strip too, because people use these during the day, like accent lighting, but it's the feature where in the daytime, based on, I think, sunset and sunrise, it'll have cooler lighting, you know, closer to blue lighting, and in the evening time after sunset in the dark, it'll have warmer lighting, closer to orange. And so this has been a feature that was part of iOS 14. You would imagine that like Philips Hue would be the first and major supporter of this feature, because they have color light bulbs that can support this, and they have Hue white light bulbs that change color temperatures, and not just turn on and off, but change different temperatures of white, not, you know, without even being color lights. But they haven't yet, and so Eve is the first to do this with their light strip. So that's really neat. And then the Clips app, The big thing for me on the Clips app update this year is, you know, Apple still supports Clips, so that's interesting. But they've changed the format from portrait only to support landscape.
It used to be squares, didn't it?
Yeah.
And now, it's like 16 by 9 or whatever.
Yeah. So.
And they did a decent update on the iPad. Like, they gave it a nice design with, like, popovers and stuff. Like, they did a good job.
And benefits for the iPhone 12 cameras, you know, that you've got better video quality. Well, this supports that now. And they've kind of shown the success for Clips in the classroom, at least, as, like, a tool that they use to play with,
like,
AR.
In every, you know, those curriculums they put out, like, everyone can code, everyone create. They use Clips constantly in that stuff. It's like their modern iMovie, basically.
Right. Yeah. It's like the direct version of iMovie, whereas iMovie on iOS is like, what can we do? How can we interpret the Mac version? This is like if iMovie were iPhone first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
And finally, breaking news.
Uh-huh.
Apple releases iOS 14.2 GM.
It's
late on a Friday with fix for new iOS update alert.
Oh, that, way to bookend the podcast.
We really have come full circle on that one.
Cool. Nice. All right. Anything else happening today?
No.
So, okay. So we've got next week, we've got pre-orders for iPhone Mini, or iPhone 12 Mini, iPhone 12 Pro Max, and HomePod Mini. A week from next Friday, we have the release of those two phones. And then sometime the following week after next week, we've got HomePod Mini release. So
correct. The week of the 16th is the HomePod Mini release.
Cool. All right. And then somewhere
and then
in all of that.
On that week as well, probably.
Yeah. So somewhere in all of that, we expect to have an event announced. So maybe by the time we talk next,
there'll
be an event.
Yeah, so next week, maybe invites? Maybe.
Yeah. That would be cool. Yeah. I'd like that. That is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you enjoy the show, you can give us a rating in Apple Podcasts or a star in Overcast. We appreciate that. A review, we really appreciate that as well. If you have any feedback, you can email us together at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach, and Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And we will be back next week. Hopefully on video again for the first time in a while, now that my move is wrapping up. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.